Hi guys, I'm Ashley and I oversee corporate relations and communications at the Institute of Design. Mayo historically has hired from the Institute of Design as well as worked on some projects with us. And we've been most recently working with the Innovation Center to help share some ideas about best practices as it pertains to innovation and building a culture of innovation. And we're pleased that some representatives from the Mayo Clinic Innovation Center will participate in an upcoming panel on September 24th in Minneapolis at B-Swing that is part of a kickoff to an executive education module that we're running at B-Swing on building a culture of innovation. The panel discussion is going to be a public event evening of September 24th, and will also include Doug Bidette from Honeywell and an individual from Room and Board talking about how they are trying to build a culture of innovation within their organizations. So today I just wanted to talk to you guys about sort of more generally how you've managed to accomplish building a culture of innovation at Mayo.
Well, I would say it's a work in progress. You know, every day is a new day, obviously, but one thing in particular that we do at CFI is we have a kind of a core platform of work where that's really dedicated to the promotion of innovation throughout the organization and really about enabling people within that. So one example of activities that we have, you know, are and resources that we dedicate are we have a grant program called CODE, which is Connect, Design, and Enable, which I believe I'm sure Amber will be speaking to you about. But it is basically funding that different groups and different people within Mayo can apply for. And really the idea behind it is it's not just about getting money to kind of support their ideas. They're also paired with a team at CFI where they have like retreats and workshops that they attend that are essentially like deep dives where they're really exposed to the principles of, you know, design thinking and user-centered design. And yeah, so that's one big activity within that space.
I think here at Mayo, we have had a culture of innovation that has kind of spanned the lifespan of Mayo Clinic, in that we were kind of one of the first integrated practices and we're always looking to create kind of new sciences and technologies. But the challenge I think that we face here is helping people understand that innovation is not just creating a new vaccine or a new tool to use in the clinic, but instead it's also about understanding, like, how do you innovate along the service line of healthcare? How do you innovate along delivery? How do you use innovation to shift the culture to be a little bit more patient-oriented? And so mm-hmm. I think that there are different ways that we are looking at innovation that way.
So having been one of the first healthcare institutions that has really was sort of an early adopter and really embraced design as fundamental to your innovation strategy, along with maybe Kaiser Permanente and Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, how would you say things have evolved since you first took on that challenge or embraced innovation in that way?
I think that the design has really been at the core of the way that we've been innovating since we began, but it's also a challenge in that we work a lot with qualitative methods. We try to understand things not necessarily from as much of a quantitative side as the rest of the institution. So it's been something that we wrestle with constantly in a very positive way in how to demonstrate the value of design and innovation to the rest of an institution that's very scientific. I think it's a very healthy struggle that we wrestle with, and it allows us to kind of constantly find value within design and understand exactly where it fits within the ecosystem of the larger institution.
That's interesting. Do you have examples that you can share of how you've been able to achieve that?
Yes. I just want to add also, because I come from Europe, where service design is also kind of struggling to be recognized, but then I come to the US where it's even struggling maybe a little more. So it's, I think, having that shift from like a product centered to a service centered, like the shift in the economy is requiring us to convince people to think differently. And I think Mayo has come a long way trying to like have people apply those principles. But yeah, I think that's one of the challenge, more the field and all the like subcategories that's growing within the design field.
Mm-hmm. I think an example of integrating service design and innovation within kind of a healthcare system is something that we did with our community health platform, where we began to redesign the care team and move that towards implementation. And as we began the project, we were tasked on the Center for Innovation side with coming up with ways to better care for a population of patients, which is a big ask. But then when we would move into the clinic, they would want things like, help us just redesign our offices so that we can see patients better. And so they wanted a really tangible outcome, and we were looking for something that was a little bit more, you know, a cultural shift. And so it was our job to then, through experimentation and prototyping, to balance changing a tool or changing a space with pushing the culture to further embrace a patient-centered model. And in that way, we really had to not only come up with evidence for why our ideas were good. So we would get a lot of things that said, sure, you can use your team model as soon as we can see that it works. And we said, well, you have to give us the opportunity to try it out before we can show you that it works. And so we're kind of have a chicken and an egg argument often with some of these groups. And so the moment that we get the opportunity to jump into a clinical space, try things out, we really try to get everything that we possibly can get out of it. We want to get quantitative metrics. We want qualitative metrics. We want examples of stories that are really very compelling. And then we knit that all together. And when we talk to leadership or when we talk to groups who are making decisions, we'd say, okay, so here's what you wanted in terms of cost savings. We have quantitative metrics on that. Here's how people felt about this. We have these beautiful stories to tell you how this has transformed your care. And then we have just these qualitative measures that can fill it all out and make it a very rounded and compelling argument for moving forward with the process.
Right.
And I would add to that, we're also very fortunate that with kind of the robustness of just the size of Mayo and kind of all that fits under its umbrella, that, you know, while we may be kind of on that fuzzy front end, a project where, you know, we might be reimagining a care delivery model, we have the Center for the Science of Healthcare Delivery, who also we can partner with and will help us with like the validation of a new model or what have you, in a way that can take out, you know, that obviously with us being on the front end, we're a little bit biased. So really adding that level of validity to what we're doing. So it's really great to be able to work that way and kind of have that available, basically.
Right. So it strikes me that, you know, when you're working in a complex organization like Mayo, that you have a little bit of an opportunity to kind of establish like a living lab or several sort of like living labs where you can sort of quickly, I would think, prototype lots of different concepts very early. Can you talk about that a little bit? And then I'm also curious to hear about where there are sort of maybe some barriers to being able to prototype when it comes to things like medical outcomes for real patients.
So I think we have several lab spaces, some formal and some that become kind of informal that we kind of integrate into our projects. So we have an inpatient lab space that's very formally designated at that. We can bring in providers to see their patients there. We can change how the space looks. We can change how the interaction feels. We can change the technology that they have available. We can change the team members. We can change really whatever we'd like, and it's this incredibly flexible system that we can set up and then also record very robustly, so we have gobs of data that comes out of it. On the other hand, though, as we set up each project, as we're doing it, we tend to develop kind of an informal lab space, and that informal lab space may be centered around a certain provider. So I go with that provider to see every patient that they see for the next 2 weeks, and so the lab space then moves around. Or it may be centered around a specific space. So I sit myself in a team room and I observe everything that happens in that team room. Or it might be centered around a process. So I might work with the groups who are in charge of that process or kind of curate the different technologies, and I understand how that works all the time. So we have one very formal space, but then we have kind of an infinite amount being embedded within the practice of informal lab spaces that we can use and kind of take advantage of as well.
So, and you were wanting to know about just kind of barriers to being able to work this way?
Right, exactly.
Okay, so I would say a lot of the barriers are probably the same that any group would anticipate when working in the space of healthcare. I mean, a lot of the time within this kind of living lab space, we're working with very often it involves the use of technology. And what inherently comes with that is, you know, we have to work with HIPAA just like everybody else does. If we are falling under the category of research, you know, obviously working through kind of the bureaucracy of kind of legal and IRB and all of that, it can be really challenging. I think another aspect that we have to be very careful of is that sometimes we can get a little carried away with ourselves and, you know, be trying something in the practice, and we have to be absolutely 100% diligent the entire time that whoever our partners are absolutely completely bought in, understand why we're doing what we're doing, that this is that this is their idea too. You know, otherwise you can create a situation where they're, it's like the ants under the magnifying glass thing really quickly. So you have to be very, very careful of that, just in terms of being, you know, sensitive and cognizant. I don't know. should I go on?
Sure. Well, is it fair to say, I mean, so you've talked a lot about, you know, going along on the patient visits with doctors that you're working with. And the impression that I'm getting is that there's just this sort of total immersion amongst all of the stakeholders. And it's interesting to hear you talk about that, because I think sometimes people, just as you were saying earlier, sometimes people think about Innovation Center as being a physical space, yeah, but they have trouble with some of the more kind of like ephemeral elements of having a sort of innovation center and what that might look like. And what I'm hearing you say is that it's like much more mobile, and that it's sort of hitting kind of every aspect of the organization. Is that fair?
Our Innovation Center, not including the lab, is really where we come to process what we learn out, mm-hmm, in the field, and the field being anything within Mayo or anywhere Mayo patients might be. And so our Innovation Center is really where we come back to work together, to process our work, to kind of come up with the insights and the way that we will deliver them and the story that we're going to tell. And then the rest of the clinic is really where our lab space is, and that's the place where we learn.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think we're uniquely kind of spoiled with the incredible access that we have and the willingness for really most people at Mayo to kind of let us come in and see what they do.
Yeah. Well, and also the patients too, that,
yeah,
they're,
absolutely,
you explain to them what you're trying to do. And I mean, more often than not, they're just like, yes, please, how can I help? You know, and that's been the most wonderful and rewarding thing, but also like you almost forget how wonderful it is to kind of work in that kind of situation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And do you credit that to Mayo being having such a strong and branded presence as a state-of-the-art research system and organization?
I think that, and that it were seen as a learning center.
Okay.
So they come here to get answers, and they come here to get really reliable answers very quickly. But they also come here in a place where they're willing to let other people learn from their experience and are very excited to kind of share their experience with others. I'd say for the most part, I think in the kind of 4 years that I've been here, maybe one or two patients have ever told me that they'd really prefer that I not spend some time with them. And that's with me trying to make it as easy as I possibly can for them to tell me to get out of the room.
Mm-hmm. How important would you say the Mayo's leadership is in terms of being sort of bought into the idea that what you're doing is important?
I almost think that it's important. I think that absolutely having leadership support for our existence, having very engaged leaders at the center level is very critically important. But the things that we talk about at the Center for Innovation and the things that we advocate for really aren't difficult for high-level leadership to say, yes, that's the right thing. We're saying, you know, this is good for the business. This is good for taking care of patients. You know, this is the direction that we should be going. And that's not that hard for leadership to agree to. I think what's really challenging is when you get down to kind of where the rubber meets the road and people who are living within one culture and we're asking them to simulate another one or to imagine changes within their lives, that's where it gets really, yeah, hard. That's where we're saying, we want you to stop doing this thing that you've done for your entire career and do this completely different thing that you've been told never to do. that's where it gets really hard. At a leadership level, you can make pretty strong arguments for the innovations that we're pushing forward.
Right. Can you talk a little bit about the parts of the organization that get messy, or I guess I should say the parts of sort of the industry that can get messy and potentially introduce roadblocks to what you're trying to do? I'm imagining insurance and some of the systems in place around patient privacy could get a bit complex.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think we do, obviously, a lot of our work is really about the patient experience. And it's very easy for people to really focus on at like the individual provider level and the behaviors and the communication and the touch points and all of that, which is important. But then, you know, you can't forget that for every interaction, there are 17 layers underneath it that you are possibly influencing. And so, you know, we'll have a project that'll be around, you know, designing a new care model. And you know, the layers really are, it's like, if you can't work out that finance piece, if you can't get the insurance companies, you know, like, if you can't work out that payment piece, if you can't work out the logistics, you know, we have probably one of the most complex scheduling systems, basically. I don't even know, like, in my mind, it's like known to man, but I don't want to be that arrogant, obviously. But it's just, you know, anytime you touch that, it's like you have to really acknowledge and recognize that, you know, the ripple effects are going to be kind of crazy. So yeah, it's the scheduling, it's the billing, it's the, you know, the legal aspects.
Yeah, I think there are very few systems in healthcare, at least at this scale of an institution, that are simple.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It looks simple on the face of it. It's because we've built them on top of 8 other systems to make it look simple. So it's very rare that you find something that is easy to fix. Yeah.
But on the bright side of things, you know, it's like if you can explain what you're doing and you're proactive about it, a lot of the time, you know, I think a lot of what CFI is, it's more of a network, and you start to figure out who the change makers are and who the people who have influence in this like ever complicated area of, you know, XYZ. And through experience, you start to understand when to start bringing those people to the table, and you explain what you're doing. And more often than not, we all want the same things. So the challenge is there. But on the other hand, we're really fortunate to have a lot of partners who can help us kind of cut through the infinite weeds everywhere. I don't know.
Right. Right. Are there some areas that you just haven't been able to penetrate, or new initiatives that you just haven't been able to get through?
I think until recently we avoided the hospital.
Okay.
The inpatient setting. I think that's primarily because, in my opinion, we're a physician-led organization and the Center for Innovation is physician-led. But interestingly, a hospital is really practically led by nursing. And so the culture was very different. And so it's just recently that we've gotten into that. We've had a hard time being able to run experimentation where we can change the kind of payment model, even on a prototype basis. We've pitched it to a few payers and a few insurance companies to see if they'd be willing to run like a 1-year pilot with us. And that seems something that's just been a little bit too complex to get us able to do. A lot of times because, you know, they negotiate contracts years out, so you can't do anything in a very agile manner.
I think we all would die to be able to really be able to take a real hard look at that issue. And, you know, we have a couple projects that are really starting to scratch the surface, but really being able to look at that whole piece of the experience and figure out how we create a more transparent and compassionate system around that. But that's, I think a lot of us are like, whoa, where do you even begin?
I know. But I think for the most part, though, we've penetrated most of what the clinic does.
Okay, interesting. It's funny that you say the cost transparency thing, because it's such a big issue for patients. And I remember working with some of our partners at Memorial Sloan Kettering, who had managed to bring 2 of the different billing departments together so that patients are getting like 1 bill, 1 invoice. And as simple as that sounds, and as such an obvious benefit to patients, the way they described it was just this massive undertaking.
Oh, huge.
Yeah.
Can we walk through an example or a story that you all are proud of a success that you've had in terms of building a culture of innovation at Mayo, or moving a very new concept through the organization and seeing it take hold?
One that's kind of just starting to get a little bit of traction is a project called OBNest. And this is a project that was started a few years ago where we took a look at our low-risk prenatal care service line and really wanted to look at, you know, how do we rethink this, recognizing the fact that this is, you know, Mayo being a kind of top medical institution that we're, but we're treating women in a very medical way who aren't sick. So with that, we partnered with the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology, and we really worked together to create a kind of reimagined model, looking at, you know, how do we rethink this whole pregnancy experience in a way that repositions the women and their families within that experience, so that they're, that we're thinking about, you know, how do we enable them to be more confident in their pregnancies? How do we really empower them and kind of activate their support people and communities and throughout that experience? Mm-hmm. So with that, it became kind of this service that really integrates kind of new tools and technology, kind of reimagines the care pathway, you know, looks at the kind of pacing and expectations set around, you know, the visits and non-visit care and all of that. And right now that is being run within the OB department. And I think from what I hear, it's going well. So, but yeah,
And Marnie ran these beautiful experiments that helped understand the true value that kind of expecting mothers were finding within the system, and where healthcare thought that there was value, but there wasn't any for the patient. And so it matched up where the mothers wanted value and where healthcare knew that value needed to be, and created a system that these mothers could really take advantage of.
So I have an 8-month-old son. So what you're saying is feels very relevant to what I just experienced, having gone through pregnancy and going in for those visits. And they, you know, they're telling you that you're measuring like this and all this stuff that kind of just is, just feels very medical, but feels very separate from your experience as a pregnant woman. So I can appreciate what you're saying. Have you thought about is there some work being done to extend any of Mayo's services into the home like they do in a lot of European countries?
I think, I mean, just picking on that model a little bit, I think a lot of the idea is that through the tools that the women have, most of, to kind of recognize that most of the care, a huge component of their care is what they do for themselves. So, you know, so in really empowering them and their self-care, so giving them access to tools and technology. So like one example is women who participate in this program will get access to a fetal Doppler that is basically theirs throughout the experience, so that they're not waiting until that next appointment to hear the baby's heartbeat. And again, these are commercially available devices that, you know, anybody can buy, but really incorporating that within their program of care and, you know, allowing them to get the answers they need at home in a more relaxed setting, and being able to bring in the people they care about kind of on their time, because it's kind of in their space, in their time, being able to give them the kind of tools and empowerment to be able to tell us when something's wrong rather than kind of vice versa, which is more typical within a medical model. So that's kind of one component.
We've done a lot of work around video visits where you could call in and talk to your provider from home, especially if it's a return visit. Mm-hmm. We created an exam room in a backpack that allows primary care providers to go see chronic care patients in their homes and do their entire appointments while they're there. So we're looking definitely outside of the walls.
That's great. So just further going on that example, what would be some of the more medical or quantitative measures that you would use to evaluate the success of the program?
So I think some of the things they're looking at, I mean, obviously they're tracking outcomes, but I know they're looking at, you know, patient satisfaction, they're looking at cost. Yeah, I think they're looking at, you know, preterm births. Again, I'm not exactly sure because it's 300 women, so I'm not that are participating in kind of the current pilot. So I'm not exactly sure what they can expect to see in terms of within the cohort in terms of results. But those are just some of the ones that come into my mind. At least a sample of the women who are participating are being interviewed and really looked at for kind of how this was for them. And, you know, hopefully not just from a satisfaction standpoint, but also really getting to the nuts and bolts of kind of how things can be improved and how we can continue to kind of grow and move forward in the model.
It's an interesting case study because it was already sitting in a bundled payment model. And so there was an advantage for Mayo Clinic to further streamline the care and find value, but there was also for the patients in that they're paying us this lump sum of money and they can know exactly what to expect from us in terms of value rather than kind of find out piecemeal as you go forward. And it kind of empowers the patient to demonstrate what is valuable rather than the clinic dictating to them what's valuable.
It strikes me that the role that the three of you are in, you are constantly shifting between the languages of the different departments, as well as the languages of, you know, sort of physician speak, patients want to be communicated to, which is likely more personal. Can you speak a little bit about that and how important the role of communication is in achieving success?
I think it's something that we look at very frequently, and it's not something that just we have to negotiate, but something that we see patients being forced to negotiate, especially when we were looking at the inpatient setting. The patients, almost everything that people say in the inpatient setting is clinical, especially from the provider side. And there wasn't even a recognition that their language was changing from one situation to the next. Like as designers, we figure out pretty quickly how to communicate within each group. But even more importantly, what it is kind of shining a light on the challenges that these different languages and kind of different ways of communicating are and the burden that it's placing on patients.
And I would add to that, you know, because Carolyn's a little bit newer, but Allison and I have been here, you know, 4.5, 5 years. And it's really easy to become kind of desensitized to over-medicalized language. And, you know, and it's something we try to be aware of. And definitely you start to kind of forget how much you're kind of switching gears and switching languages depending on who you talk to. But one thing that I really love that, you know, we hired, maybe a year ago, we have an illustrator that we hired and has, I think, been a really wonderful asset, to our team because, you know, he comes in and he'll illustrate different patient stories in this very real and raw way that can really kind of crystallize in a really beautiful way, kind of what's happening in a situation. And a lot of times they're beautiful, but they're not pretty. They can highlight really dark areas in experiences that people are having with their condition or with the healthcare system. Mm-hmm. And I think the capturing of that for us is, it's a really wonderful reminder. And I think it just, again, it's been a really wonderful tool to continue to communicate across different roles. And, you know, it just takes the words out from, you know, just being words in thin air.
Mm-hmm. So tell me a little bit more about that. This illustrator is having conversations with patients or he's working with in the innovation center, sort of going on these patient visits with physicians, capturing this stuff and then producing drawings, then get shared out with stakeholders who would be making decisions strategically about where to go next? Is that?
Yeah, I think he does multiple things. So he works kind of integrated within our team. So sometimes that he's going off patient visits and really understanding kind of what's going on. It can also work that another designer has done a lot of the work and needs to put together a report that really can crystallize the story that they're trying to tell. And so we might come to him and say, you know, here's what I saw, here's what I'm trying to convey. And he's a master at putting those together. Or it can just be something where we tell a story that we've had kind of historically that hasn't come through very clearly yet. Mm-hmm. And we need him to, you know, help us be more kind of convincing when we tell the story, and he can do that. So he can work on the ground level or kind of in the middle on the team when you get to the nitty gritty report writing or kind of at the top high level, you know, how do you clarify something?
Mm-hmm. Aside from illustration, can you think of other specific tools that have been really crucial to your process?
Oh, gosh. You know, I would say something I use a lot, especially during the research process, is we do a ton of like card sort activities and visualization activities and things like that to really be able to kind of enable articulation and around, you know, what does a patient value? Do they value this more than that? Is there, you know, in mm-hmm. what ways, for what, you know? So I would say, for me, that's something that I always go back to. And just in terms of being able to kind of draw out a different type of conversation. And also, you know, recognizing that a lot of the time, you know, while we have a lot of access to patients, depending on the project, if it's a rare condition, you know, you don't have unlimited access or unlimited time. So it's like really drawing out, helping people kind of think.
So
that's one tool that I really like to go to.
We also have, just in terms of this information, we have an embedded IT team who can help you type kind of different interfaces that you want to try out or new systems of kind of connecting different pieces of technology.
Okay.
And another one that's an invaluable asset that we have here is our innovation coordinators, who I know Amber will be at your panel, but they really know how to navigate Mayo Clinic kind of politically, how to make friends, how to talk to different groups. And then they have a, you know, kind of a lifetime's worth of favors that they're willing to call in for us. So if I say, you know, I'd really love to see a heart transplant tomorrow, chances are they can get me into a heart transplant tomorrow. So, or, you know, I want 20 people to talk to by Friday for this type of interview. You can pretty much bet that there will be 20 people ready to go.
Right. That's awesome. One quick question about data. You described what you're collecting as gobs of data, and I just was curious about, like, what are you doing with all of that, and how are you making it actionable for either your team or for other stakeholders within Mayo?
I think that's one of the challenges that we face. We try to always distill it into insights and reports that are actionable for the specific stakeholders that we're putting it together. But I think one of the ongoing challenges we have is, once a project wraps up, how can you best take all of that data and those insights that were put together for that one particular reason and make them meaningful to other projects? And so we've done it different ways. We tell stories, we make personas, mm-hmm. you know, create kind of different system maps. But I think we have yet to kind of perfect how to make it so that our data can slide back and forth between projects.
Uh-huh. All right, guys. Well, this has been really fantastic. I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
And I'm looking forward to meeting you on the 24th and 25th of September.
Great.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye-bye. See ya. Take care.